going to conclude this hour with a conversation with Gloria Steinem, founder of the National Women's Political Caucus, who created Ms. Magazine, a powerful voice of progressive feminism for decades. Gloria Steinem joins me now. Welcome, Gloria.
Thank you so much.
What are your thoughts after this really extraordinary two-year period and one amazing night?
Very hard to put them together, but I feel as if this is a vote against the future, and the future is going to happen anyway. It's something that's happening in other countries as well, obviously, with Brexit. It's happening even in India, where a very right-wing chief of state is now present, a Hindu fascist, as they refer to him. And it does feel like a vote against the social justice movements that have made so much change and actually changed the majority opinion, and against the insecurity of borders these days and change in general. It's, you know, I understand it. It makes me very sad. I think it's doomed to failure, but it's very powerful right now.
When you say you understand it, what does that mean?
Well, for instance, you know, every once in a while, a man will say to me, a black woman took my job. Now, probably that's a Trump voter. And I say to him, but who said it was your job? You know, it's a sense of entitlement that he has, that he was brought up with, that he deeply believes. And it's going away, you know, because it's in about 20 minutes, this country is no longer going to be a majority white country. Will be majority many different nationalities and people of color. And that seems to me kind of great. You know, we're going to understand other countries better. It's going to be a more interesting culture. We're going to have better food. You know, I mean, but to him, it feels profoundly threatening because he was raised to believe he had a place in a hierarchy that was inevitable.
Is it wrong of the Democratic Party to have left all those people in the lurch on some level and not offered something for them and left this big opening for Donald Trump?
You know, I'm not sure that we can take responsibility for bias because it is a white lash. You know, the people who were so profoundly against President Obama that I often thought if they had cancer and he had the cure, they wouldn't accept it. So there, you know, there is a very deep bias there. However, it's also true that there's economic suffering, and I think that polarization is something we are responsible for.
Following up on John's question, Gloria, do you think, though, perhaps that, you know, with the perfect analogy you opened with, that the white man believes a black woman took his job, obviously not realizing that we African-American women still make substantially less on the dollar than they do, or white women, but that's a separate conversation. But do you think that there wasn't enough clarification, perhaps, by the Clinton campaign that, yes, you're suffering economically, but you're blaming the wrong person? Because I did hear that last night from people who felt they didn't effectively enough make that distinction specifically to that group of people. Mm.
You know, I'm not sure that that would have worked because it's abstract, but I think what might have been helpful is to focus more on the kinds of jobs that men with high school educations and skills that are very important would be interested in. I mean, a lot of the jobs that they see coming up are jobs they don't want because they're in healthcare. They're in what's called the pink collar ghetto. It's mostly female and therefore to them feminine area of work. But what we need is to repair and reconstruct the infrastructure in this country. So we need a program like in the Depression. You know, we need the WPA again. And if we had focused on that, and indeed Hillary Clinton was supporting a huge program of repair to the infrastructure, then they might have seen the kind of jobs that appeal to them and that they can do, and we didn't do that enough.
But I'm wondering if Hillary Clinton played into a kind of Clarence Thomas narrative where she focused way too much on these tapes and abusive language moments of Donald Trump and not enough on that infrastructure, I can bring the jobs back message. And that ultimately, Americans who are hurting basically said, it doesn't matter that much to me. You know what I mean? Get me a job.
Well, it's a very gendered division that you're talking about, because the tapes mattered to way more to women than to men. I mean, they did to many men, too. And, you know, lots of people came forward, athletes came forward and said, not in my locker room, you know. But we must remember that it's also a deep bias that exists against women. And there's not a lot we can do about that except understand it and reach out and so on. But it isn't something that we can change.
Gloria, can I ask a question about, you know, there's a lot of conversation about Hillary running as a woman and how much she struggled with whether or not to make that a key portion of her campaign. And I wanted to ask about the fact that it was not until the last debate that we finally heard a substantive question on reproductive rights. And I'm wondering what you believe happened to the conversation around reproductive rights now in the courts.
I agree with you that that is perceived as a side issue as opposed to a fundamental issue. I mean, the way that we begin hierarchies is controlling reproduction, and that means controlling the bodies of women. And of course, if there is a strong racist system or a caste system as in India, then it becomes even more vital to control reproduction, because that's the only way you can maintain the separation of groups that racism or a caste system or a class system requires. So those things are intertwined, and they're fundamental, but they are still viewed as a kind of side issue. I mean, one example that I think is very striking is that when you look at the predictors of whether a country will be violent within itself or whether it will be willing to use military violence against another country, the strongest predictor is not poverty or access to natural resources or religion or even degree of democracy. It's violence against females, because that's what we see first in the home, or at least control or dominance of females. It normalizes the idea that one group is born to dictate to another. And yet, that is not mentioned in our foreign policy usually. I mean, Hillary Clinton did it more than most, but, well, she probably was the first person to do it at all. But it is not viewed as important. Do you remember the Mujahideen in Afghanistan, who then turned into the Taliban? They were kind of the fathers of
Sure.
the Taliban.
Yeah.
They explained why they were against the more secular government in Afghanistan. They said, we're going to war because, one, girls are being allowed to go to school. Two, women have to give their permission to get married. And three, women can come to political meetings. And I remember those headlines in the Washington Post. And we happened to have some meeting in the State Department at the time, which was about something completely different. I mean, I'd forgotten what it was. And I remember standing up in the auditorium and saying, we're on the wrong side. And people laughed. You know, the State Department officials thought it was such an extraneous thing to say that they just laughed. But it's not an extraneous thing to say. And we have not taken that into consideration as a kind of root normalization of dominance and violence.
One last question, because we have to go here. Kelly, you can weigh in if you want as well. You say this is going back to the past. And I understand what you're saying. But it's also possible, I'm wondering, if this huge turnout of rural white voters who were so convinced of their privilege and who are now understanding that, no, they don't have it anymore, and they have to fight for something, Maybe it's not going back to the past, but it is the present. They've won for now, but essentially over the next 4 years, we have a much more candid engagement on issues of economic justice, and everybody's out of the woodwork right now. And that's the way change happens. You know, Trump isn't particularly attractive to a lot of people in America, but that's how things work. It's not the past, it's the present. What do you think?
It's going to slow down the change, I agree. But in terms of the changes in the country, the first generation of babies that is, who are majority babies of color, have already been born, regardless of their ability to stop immigration or slow immigration or to do away with family planning and so on. I mean, you know, this, people look you in the eye and say the white race is committing suicide through contraception and abortion. I mean, they really believe that. But the fact is that they can slow change and they can make it much more painful, but it's inexorable. I mean, we are going to change. We should always reach out to each other and tell each other our stories and our concerns and try to find all kinds of ways in which we can work together. And I believe that we can do that. But I don't think we can reverse course completely. I think this will slow progress.
I have to say, Gloria, I actually interviewed Gordon Baum, the white supremacist who's now deceased, in one of my last interviews with him by phone. He didn't actually know what I looked like or that I was African-American. He mentioned his concerns about white women not having enough babies, and that was actually one of his major concerns a few years ago. Can I ask you, Gloria, is there any sign of hope for you in terms of the issues you care about that you take away?
Yes, you. You're my sign of hope, right? You know, I've seen so much. One advantage of being old, I have to say, is that you remember when it was worse, way, way, way worse. It's frustrating, it's sad, it's tragic, but most of the issues I care about, and I think probably the three of us mostly care about, are now majority issues in public opinion polls, and they didn't even exist as phrases when I was in college or getting out of college. So consciousness is changing. The idea of possibilities are changing. We, you know, from understanding that marriage and love and connection happens between two women and two men, to understanding that, I would say in general, what we are figuring out, and what incidentally I think we knew for most of human history before colonialism and a whole bunch of other stuff, is that human beings are linked. We are not ranked. That the paradigm of society is a circle, not a pyramid. And the cultures that were here before Columbus showed up were built on that principle. We're enormously sophisticated cultures. And in fact, our Constitution is based on the Iroquois Confederacy.
Yeah, I love that.
And Marx and Engels read a book about the Iroquois Confederacy. It's where they got their idea of communism. I mean, they made one big error, it turns out, in retrospect, which is that they said that the end justifies the means. And the whole principle of this culture was that the means should reflect the ends you want as much as possible.
Well, the fact that Americans are coming to grips with their history in a candid, real consciousness way, I think, is a fabulous takeaway from this era, if not this campaign. Mm-hmm. Final question, Gloria Steinem. Is Donald J. Trump your president?
No. No, he's not. You know, I'm not going to disobey the law, but I'm not going to pretend he represents me.
Gloria Steinem, feminist, social, and political activist. And, anyway, your name speaks for itself. Thanks so much for spending time with us.
Well, thank you for the companionship on this morning. Thank you.